I had this really nice discussion with a client last summer. We were just hiking. He's in his late 60s, successful business person, and I had an interesting career. And we were just talking about life in general and perspective change as you get older, but like noticing kind of some smaller cycles within the larger cycle of life, and where they happen. You know, I sometimes consume some mountain craft media. Very rarely do I actually read or watch anything kind of climbing related or skiing related. But every once in a while, I'm like, oh, there's this 20-year-old kind of like telling you how it is. And I'm like, oh, they're in one of these cycles where like all of a sudden when you're in your early to mid-20s, you start figuring out that things aren't as concrete as you thought. And you're kind of like, whoa, I'm exploring this. This is new. I got to say it to somebody. And, you know, I was there the same way. I think 40s is the same way. I mean, I'm very much experiencing that now. This kind of like, oh, this perspective change. And I've had all this life experience. Now in my 40s, I'm starting to go, oh, I'm going to rethink these things. All of a sudden, this seems less concrete. And then this client I was talking to is like, yeah, it happens again in your 60s. And you see these cycles and you experience them. And there's this classic thing in teaching where it's like the less you know about a subject, the easier it is to teach to some degree, because what you know or what you think you know seems more concrete. So you're like, I'll just teach you this. And as you get more and more knowledge about a subject, it becomes a lot harder to teach it because there's more threads kind of connecting in the same place, and you're like, and sometimes it's a less definitive answer. And I've found that with my guidings, sometimes it's really hard for me to teach now because I just know more than I did 10 years ago, where things were a little more, you know, concrete. And now I'm like, well, I'm not sure, you know, like maybe not, I don't know, let's see if it works. And recently I was reading the Avalanche Review, the newest issue, which I do really like, and I think it's a really good publication. It's one of the only real publications in kind of the mountain craft industry, really, in the U.S. And it, you know, once again, I've mentioned this before, it has a variety of different people who contribute. So it could be academics, you know, people studying snow science, trying to figure out something in the snow science world, but it could also be academics trying to figure out like the heuristic human side of things. It's got people from guiding backgrounds, forecasting backgrounds, you know, ski patrol backgrounds, industrial backgrounds with snow. So it's kind of an interesting mix. And I do think the avalanche slash skiing industry is kind of further ahead than the rock and alpine disciplines. And if you think about guiding in terms of thinking about how you approach the day, documentation, sharing of information, and I think that's all changing now, but they kind of been kind of ahead of the curve in a lot of ways for a longer period of time, in my opinion. And one of the things that struck me about reading this issue is that I kind of realized that regardless of who was writing the article or how old they were or what point in their life cycle or their education or what, you know, what path brought them to this article, I kind of feel like everybody there is just trying to justify why we are doing these things in the mountains, right? And I feel like oftentimes there's this like, well, if we just had the right acronym or we just had the right conceptual model, or we had just the right data or just the right study, we'd be able to like have some concretes about this stuff. So that way we can kind of justify not only what we did or what we want to do, but why we're doing it. And I just kind of realized that, A, I appreciate everybody trying to find the answer in their own ways or add their piece into what may be the answer, right? The different points that may equal an answer. But what I came to realize is like, life is really intangible, right? When you really kind of keep asking why and you keep expanding like where you think your answer edges, and you go, well, why? You get to a point where you just like go, I don't know. It's kind of like people who study black holes. Like, if I was smarter, I would love to be like a theoretical physicist and study black holes and all that stuff, because I think that stuff's really fascinating. And, you know, people who study that stuff, there's a fair amount of data that they have and things that they've been able to observe and calculate. But they get to the point, they're like, but we don't know what happens after this point. Like, once you go past the event horizon, like, we're not really sure what happens. And I feel like us in the mountain world trying to figure out ways to make a decision to do something, you get to a point, if you just keep asking why, and you're like, I don't know anymore, because life's very intangible. You know, I was reading one article where it's like, well, you should focus on consequence, because that's a known thing, versus probability, which is an unknown thing. And I'm like, well, but if I think about consequence, like if I say I want to get in my car and go to the store, well, one of the consequences of that is dying. So how do I justify going to the store if one of my consequences is dying? Like, well, you're probably not going to die. Well, now we're dealing with probability again. So it's like, there's no magic special equation that gives us justifiable answers. And then sometimes, you know, sometimes the probability is more known. Like, if I'm going to try some like wild, newfangled, like parkour style boulder problem, I know my probability is pretty low. And if I'm at the gym, what I don't know is the consequence. Like, I could fall off funny and break a collarbone or twist my ankle. Like, I don't actually know, but I'm pretty sure I'm not going to make the move, right? That's just not the kind of movement I do. Where sometimes some things, the consequences are pretty obvious. Like, well, this is the consequence. And, you know, that seems more obvious. So we're on this constant fluctuating spectrum of trying to evaluate the situation with the data we have, but make a decision to actually do something. So, you know, the term uncertainty is certainly tossed around a lot in the avalanche world, in the mountain world. And it's just more of a term we're using now in guiding. And it's just like, there's so much that we're actually uncertain about, right? But there's another term that's also kind of interesting, ambiguity, where it's like, well, here's this data that could be read in multiple different ways or interpreted in multiple different ways. So how does that help with my uncertainty if I read this data one way and the equally skilled person next to me reads it another way? We kind of have different answers. Where does that leave us, right? So I just think this piece of trying to create something tangible, a tangible knowledge base, and something that's oftentimes intangible is really interesting. And maybe it's just because I have a lot of time on my hands now and it's something I've been thinking about, but that particular issue of the Avalanche Review kind of sparked this whole thing, enough so that I actually wrote the editor, Lynn Wolf, and we had like a little micro discussion about that whole concept of trying to define the intangible. In a lot of ways, when we're trying to make something tangible out of the intangible, we're trying to have some sort of control over that information, right? Because, well, if I can make this tangible, then I can figure out I can reverse engineer an equation to get me there. But I don't know what the calculus of consciousness is. Like, it's really hard for me, especially recently when thinking about traveling the mountains after I haven't really been traveling the mountains all winter and as a recreational person or as a guide, realizing, wow, I've really reduced my exposure to the hazard quite a bit. Then also seeing the ramifications of people traveling the mountains. A lot of guides have been, unfortunately, being killed in the field. You know, even just my discussion with Silas today, he watched a recreational climber take a pretty bad fall and get pretty severely injured, right? So I'm like, huh, how do we justify this? And at some point, you get to a wall if you keep asking why, and you're like, I don't know why. It's just, I'm drawn to this and I can't really articulate past this thing, because there are other people around the world who have no interest in mountain climbing, but have just as rewarding lives and they're just as equally engaged and find satisfaction and challenge in the activities they do that have no resemblance to mountain guiding in terms of the physical activity or whatever. So it's like, you know, it's just really interesting. This also is relevant. There was this avalanche that happened to someone I know recently. and they sent some video and they sent a write-up about it. And I'm not going to get into all the data because, once again, you can. It's easy to armchair an incident just based on data, but to actually know the thought process and the decision-making process that went into that when you're not there feeling the snow, feeling the air, just feeling your own excitement or whatever it is, like that's something we're not going to talk about. But essentially, they chose a specific line, which I've actually skied, because of the avalanche hazard of the day and the avalanche problems of the day. It's simple terrain. It's essentially mid-20-degree slopes with some spots that are a little approaching 30, you know. Very, you know, nice, easy, gentle run out. Like, there's no terrain traps, there's no trees, there's no cliff bands, there's no little gullies. Like, it's a pretty mellow thing. So if you were standing on top of this slope, you'd be like, what a beautiful slope to ski. It's nothing radical. Like, it's not super steep by any means. It's got a nice pitch to it. It's going to mellow out towards this little bench. And you can have a nice stopping spot, you know, and blah, 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 blah. And so they very intentionally chose this slope to ski because of all the things. Well, during the course of skiing it, the person I know set off an avalanche. Luckily, they were able to ski out of it because they're right on the very edge. But they said it was a D2.5 to D3 avalanche. That is a significant avalanche with significant consequence. So if you were at the top of that slope and you're like, oh, I'm just going to use... The consequence of me dying here is essentially zero. Yet the slope produced an avalanche that could easily kill you. So it's not zero. So essentially, we're dealing with situations and decisions when really we're always dealing with almost a non-zero number. The only way to have a zero for me not dying on this ski run is if I don't ski that ski run or I don't go in the mountains, right? That's how we can put a zero there. We remove ourselves from the hazard, right? But then we miss out on that opportunity to do this thing that for some reason gives us joy or whatever the term you want to use is. So yeah, I've just been trying to unravel some of these life mysteries, if you will. Now that I'm in my 40s, I'm going through this particular point of an adult's life. You're like, huh, even more things are intangible than I thought or uncertain than I thought. Certainly having this medical issue that I have, you know, that's, I would never have guessed that would have happened to me. There's no way to predict that, you know, don't even really know what the consequences are at this point, you know, besides what I already have. So it's just an interesting thing. So I want people to keep striving to figure out the calculus of consciousness and be able to come up with, like, here's the equation to make the decision to go or no go on this rock climb, to make this move, to ski this run, to do this alpine climb, whatever. Like, I would love there to be some rubric that we can all have better ways of making decisions that are more concrete with less uncertainty and less ambiguity. But the human factor is always going to be there. Once again, I always think the human factor is like the fourth dimension of decision-making. It's because it is an intangible thing that drives us to make certain decisions, even when there's some pretty obvious data in front of us that really tells us we shouldn't do the decision we just made, but we still do it anyways. Or we don't do the thing and everything's fine. You know, someone else goes skis the slope and they're fine. You're like, well, what is right? So I hate to be a little bit too wish-washy this morning, but it's definitely been something that's been spurred in my mind as I was reading those articles and going, huh, what is this all about, right? How do we make these decisions when we really start thinking about peeling away the layers and what are the roots to why we do anything, why we see something this way, why we interpret things this way, you know? And it kind of comes down to, like, there's just a point where you're like, I don't know. It's intangible. So just food for thought.